Another date for North Carolina's 2022 primary. Maybe. This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Glad to have you along. As always, it is Friday. That means time to get caught up on some of what happened in the wild world of North Carolina politics. Here for our conversation for the very first time is Donna King, editor-in-chief at the Carolina Journal. That's an arm of the conservative John Locke Foundation, as well as Rob Schofield, director of the progressive NC Policy Watch. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Guys.
Let's start with the 2022 primary. Once upon a time, scheduled for March 8th, the state Supreme Court ordered it moved to May 17th as it considers a redistricting lawsuit. As that case plays out, lawmakers decided this week to move it back to June 7th, saying it will allow for a more orderly primary. Democrats all voted against this, saying it's not necessary right now and pointing out that June 7th is the final day of many K-12 public school calendars, so that's likely to present other logistical challenges. It's unclear if the governor will veto, but seems quite possible. Donna, why was this change to the primary schedule needed now in mid-January?
Well, the date we're really watching is February 2nd, actually, because oral arguments will start before the North Carolina Supreme Court, which has a Democrat majority, 4-3 Democrat majority. They're going to start hearing arguments on February 2nd on these maps, on lawsuits stemming from the electoral maps. And they really need to complete that work by February 18th. Final maps need to be in the hands of the Board of Elections by February 18th. What they're saying, the State Board of Elections, is that they need something to get out there so that folks can reopen, they can reopen filing, folks know where they're running, and they need a final version of that map. So given that tight timeline, it's not really May that we're worried about. It's more of this February 2nd for arguments and February 18th to get a final map. That's why the Republican-controlled legislature said they really needed to push it to give themselves a little breathing room in the event that the court orders them to make changes.
Well, you know, I think that the Supreme Court has already indicated that they've kind of taken control of this matter. It sort of reminds me, I mean, I was trying to envision an analogy. It's kind of like the lifeguard at the pool, at the summer pool, has blown the whistle and told all the kids to get out of the pool. Now there's some kids standing beneath the lifeguard stand, sort of begging to get back in the pool. And that's sort of what I think of when I think of the General Assembly here. The Supreme Court's made clear, look, we got this under control. We're working with the State Board of Elections. It may be that we need to delay it. We'll see. But at this point, there's really no need for the Republican leadership of the General Assembly to try and re-inject itself back into the process. I'm confident the court can figure out a way to get things scheduled. The obvious solution here is the court needs to appoint a special master or even draw the maps itself, because the legislature's proven, or at least the Republican majority's proven, they can't draw fair maps. So I guess the sad thing here is that we could be avoiding all of this if the Republicans had simply stuck with the independent commission they proposed, I don't know, 4 or 5 times when they were in the minority. If we had something like that, all this back and forth would be unnecessary.
So I have shades. I have memories of Nathan Persily, a special master from Stanford. I'm not looking at notes here. I don't believe Persily ever drew maps that were used in elections. So a finer point, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but a finer point on this is this notion of a special master. Rob, isn't that maybe getting one or two steps ahead here? Let's say that this goes before the state Supreme Court. Can't they issue a standard? Can't they hand something back to the legislature? Let me frame it this way. Shouldn't they give the legislature one more chance to do this under its guise, its framework, if the Supreme Court is to offer one, and give them another crack at these districts?
I think that's probably their instinct. I think that's the court's typical inclination in matters like this, is they want to defer to the people who have statutory duties to draw these maps. I'm just making the point that, my gosh, I don't know how many times that the Republican leadership of the General Assembly needs to prove themselves incapable of drawing fair maps. They continually, time after time after time, draw these maps that are so absurdly gerrymandered as to be just laughable. And, you know, they've given absolutely no indication that they have any other motivation in this matter other than to try to figure out ways to preserve their legislative majority. So I suppose that's quite possible, but I think it would be eminently reasonable to simply say, you know, like the lifeguard, everybody out of the water, we're going to take care of this matter.
Donald, we're going to move on and talk about judges and justices and recusal here in a second, but I'm interested to hear if you have a most desired outcome as it pertains to this case. Of course, we had the lower three judge, the lower three judge trial, and I'll drop just a little context in here for our listeners. I know you know it, but thus far, these new congressional legislative districts have been held up. They're now on appeal before the seven justice state Supreme Court, as you noted earlier, four Democrats, three Republicans. But what would you like to come out of these oral arguments and out of this appeal early next month before the state's high court?
Well, I think ultimately the most important thing is that the Constitution is upheld. You're correct that this lower court, this three-judge panel, which was two Republicans and one Democrat, unanimously upheld those maps. And the Constitution of North Carolina clearly lays out that the legislature bears the responsibility to draw these maps. And I think that what you're seeing is that the high court, the justices on the North Carolina Supreme Court, are likely to give them the opportunity to draw that map, whatever changes they need to make. I think it will not include any sort of special master, which you're correct, that did not end up drawing maps that were used in elections. I think what you'll really see, and I think the important thing is that these justices uphold the Constitution of North Carolina.
All right, so the delayed primary is due to legal challenges over new congressional and legislative districts. Several groups contend that the new districts violate the state constitution and should be struck down. The state Supreme Court will hear arguments next month, and several justices are being called on to recuse. Democrat Anita Earls once challenged different maps in court, and her campaign for the bench seat that she currently sits on was funded in part by a group that is now among the plaintiffs. Republican Phil Berger Jr. is the son of Phil Berger Sr., most powerful man in North Carolina politics, and Democrat Sam Ervin is up for statewide re-election. There is some limited precedent for judges to not hear elections-related cases in elections years. So, succinctly please, which justices, if any, need to recuse from this case? Rob.
Well, first of all, judges don't get recused from cases because of their ideology or because of where they worked in the past or because of who funded their campaigns. I mean, that's such a slippery slope. We wouldn't have any judges making any decisions. Paul Newby was a prosecutor for 20 years. Should he no longer be hearing criminal appeals? Of course, that would be absurd. So we're not going to go down that road. I think that the attempt to urge Earls and Ervin to recuse themselves are just a matter of Republicans trying to push back because they see the vulnerability that they have with Justices Berger and Berenger. I mean, Berger is the son of the defendant in the case. Berenger was someone who actually voted for the law that's being challenged. You can't get much more of a conflict than that. So if anybody should recuse themselves, it's those two. I don't expect them to do it. I don't expect any of the justices to recuse themselves. I think it's unfortunate that the two Republican justices are not. But there's no way we're going to go down the road of recusing judges from decisions based upon where they worked or the causes that they worked for in the past. If we did that, we wouldn't have, that just wouldn't work in the legal profession. We have judges throughout the state and federal judiciary who had careers in the law before they served on courts.
Don, I'm coming right to you, but a point of quick clarification, Rob, if I'm not mistaken, Berenger, a former state senator, voted on a voter ID and a constitutional amendment provision in a separate case that's before the Supreme Court. These maps are not something that
That's a good point. You're absolutely right. That was the subject of the recusal motion in that case. You're right. That's a distinction.
There's a whole lot in the atmosphere. So it's
Right. Those are the recusals we're talking. Those are the recusals. The recusal motions vis-a-vis Berger and Berenger were made in that case. And I guess I was trying to make the point. They have given rise to this motion to attempt to get Anita Earls and Justice Ervin to recuse themselves from this case. As I said, I don't think any of the justices is going to recuse themselves in any of these cases.
But let me follow up real quick with you, Rob. Do you think any of them should in this redistricting case?
I don't see any evidence that that's necessary in the redistricting case.
Donna, which justices, if any, should recuse in this redistricting case?
Well, I think the important thing to note is that what we're really talking about was an effort to force their recusal. Back when we were talking about, like you mentioned, the voter ID and the cap on the income tax, in that lawsuit, the motion by plaintiffs was to force their recusal, which has not happened. That is 200 years of precedent. In the majority of cases, the individual justice decides to on themselves. They take that responsibility on themselves to decide whether to recuse themselves or not, or whether they can view these cases impartially. So that motion was a forced recusal. I think it's also important to note that a court filing that was filed on Wednesday, today, that plaintiffs, the North Carolina League of Conservation Voters, in their case on the redistricting maps, they responded said that no one should recuse themselves. They're saying that this is an issue of statewide importance, and they think all of the justices on the North Carolina Supreme Court should stay engaged in the case.
Finally, a couple of news nuggets out of Washington. U.S. House Representative Greg Murphy has been appointed to fill a vacancy on the Powerful Ways and Means Committee. He's a Republican and in the minority until likely next January. Meanwhile, Senator Tom Tillis declared Wednesday that if Republicans ever abolish the filibuster in the U.S. Senate, he'll resign from Congress. Which story is more notable and why? Donna?
Well, I think that this filibuster idea is really important because we, of course, experienced that in the vote over in the two voting bills that were faced in Capitol Hill. Of course, Tom Tillis, being North Carolina senator, he voted against these bills, and he has also been adamant about not eliminating the filibuster. And I think you'll find that that Americans and North Carolinians in particular are pretty split on the idea of a filibuster. And 49% of Americans who, you know, consider themselves Democrats, about 40% say that they would be in support of ending the filibuster on key issues, including these election bills. So I really think that that is the more important story of those two, because it shows you where our Republican senator is standing on keeping that filibuster and holding that line.
Well, I agree the filibuster is certainly a bigger story. I think Tillis's comment was sort of laughable. I don't think anybody in their right mind believes that he would actually resign from the U.S. Senate. If they do, I've got some Florida swampland I want to sell to them. He's already voted before to make an exception to the filibuster on Supreme Court nominees. I believe I'm right there. Tillis is the same senator who did a complete 180 on immigration as soon as Donald Trump attacked him. If somehow Donald Trump came out and decided he was against the filibuster, Tom Tillis would probably have to be against the filibuster, too. I don't think anybody took that too seriously. Murphy's appointment is good for him because special interests love to shower campaign cash on members of the Tax Writing Committee, which is what the Ways and Means Committee is. But last time I checked, there's like 40-plus members on the committee. It's like a tenth of the whole U.S. House, so I'm not sure it's really that powerful of a position.
Per usual, I don't know if there was a whole lot that happened in Washington this week. There's a lot of noise, but I don't know if anything actually happened in Washington. Donna, anything else?
Well, we're watching that closely, what's kind of happening, of course, with inflation. You know, we had 7% inflation in December. It's really hitting folks hard. And I think when things get to that kitchen table point, you know, things like the filibuster and supply chains, all those things go away when, you know, milk and gas is hard to come by for some of the poorest North Carolinians. And, you know, when we're talking about the filibuster, Senator Tillis really split with Donald Trump when he was talking about trying to get rid of the filibuster. So I think this is going to be coming up time and time again. And it is disheartening to some degree to see people really becoming much more tribalized in the way that they approach politics. And I think that's what we're seeing on Capitol Hill. I think we're in for a year of likely a lot of change and a lot more conflict.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Rob, did you have something to say?
Well, I was going to say, I wrote a column this week on the inflation story. I hope folks will check it out. I think it's important to remember that while inflation is certainly something that bears watching, it's also true that it is attributable to supply chain issues and to the pandemic. And it's something that's likely, it's already started to slow. It's something that's likely to continue to get better in 2022. And it's worth reminding ourselves that the United States economy has been growing by leaps and bounds. And I know Tillis has spoken out blaming Biden somehow for the inflation that's affecting the entire world, actually. But In fact, that's not the case, that it's Biden's doing. And I'm sure Tillis would not want to take us back to the high unemployment and zero growth that Biden inherited.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Donna King is editor-in-chief at the Carolina Journal. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Remember that you can always catch a truncated version of this conversation on the WNC terrestrial radio airwaves, 4:50 Friday afternoons. And much appreciated if you would like to rate and or review this podcast wherever it is that you downloaded it. We'll talk to you again next week. Indeed, enjoy that snowy weekend.